Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello again, it's the IGN UK podcast with me, Simon, and I've got Matt here.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, Simon. How are you?
I'm well, actually, today. It's technically a day off today, but we're just woken up. Have we just woken up? It's 11, we haven't woken up. But thought we'd do a podcast because that's what we do now. We've always done it. Dale.
Hello.
Help me out here.
This is the same three as last week, isn't it?
Is it?
It's rare that we do that.
I've lost track. They've all blurred to one. I'm not going to lie to you.
It's unique. We can follow on the conversations from last week. Can you remember what they were?
I can't. Probably more food mashups. Have we got more food mashups? Yeah. I haven't done any of that this week. But the reason we're recording on a Friday, although it is a bank holiday, it is VE Day, 75th anniversary. Put it in your diaries. Well, it's too late now. You should. You know, it's over. And
by the time they're listening to this, exactly. Yeah, it's mostly over.
For next year, remind yourself. But there was an Inside Xbox event last night, which is why we didn't record yesterday. So we're doing it today. Mm. So I suppose we might as well talk about that. Otherwise, it would have been a waste of time. So
yeah.
We were promised Assassin's Creed Valhalla gameplay. Did we get any?
Absolutely not.
I mean,
maybe technically we did.
We got
in-engine stuff.
Yeah.
Is that gameplay?
No, not by my definition.
No. It was slightly disappointing. It was disappointing to me that it was even shorter than the actual cinematic trailer, but
substantially shorter, like about a quarter of the time.
But
as well.
I assume, like, have Ubisoft announced they're doing any, like, June E3 digital thing yet? I don't think they've announced what they're doing, have they?
I don't, because we've got EA Play, we know that we've got that.
Yeah.
We know that we've got Xbox obviously doing a series of what they call the 2020 monthly reveals.
Hmm.
I'm trying to think I don't think Ubisoft have said that they're doing something.
Well, you just
they will, almost certainly.
They'd at least do a stream where they go in depth on this, and Watch Dogs needs to make a comeback at some point.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of games coming. And yeah, it's just, did want to see more Valhalla, so I'm disappointed by that. But at the same time, I'm not overly surprised.
But let's be a little bit, let's try and make the most of the shit that we got, basically. is what you saw, is there anything there that excites you? Because certainly,
it definitely
siege
excites
battles,
me.
Siege yeah. battles, I think, like, we can extrapolate that. We know there was a battering ram there, and we see Ivor like chucking an axe at like a guy on a ballista. That looks great, and I hope that that expands into that. Could be a really cool feature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I'm hyped for that game, right? I'm excited for it. I was excited for it when, you know, it was first teasing that image anyway, and then the cinematic was incredible, and this just adds to that excitement. But it was tinged with disappointment because I was expecting to see something else, really. I wanted to see what the game looks like, you know,
exactly,
when we're actually playing
especially
it.
Especially as they were building up to it all stream, like the little reminders at the bottom, like Valhalla gameplay coming soon, and then it was just that. But at the same time, still one of my most anticipated games already. And
yeah, sure.
I'm definitely going to play it because it looks fantastic.
I mean, there was that news story that came out. You might have written it, Matt, actually, which was it's not as big as Odyssey.
So I didn't write that one. But yes, that is something that I believe it... Something like the Malaysian Ubisoft Twitter account had let this out of the bag. Someone had been... They did it as a quote tweet, I think, where they were discussing something on Twitter. But the basics is that they're not looking to make this the biggest and longest Assassin's Creed. Because obviously, over time... Those games feel like almost like the Harry Potter books. Like the next one has to be bigger. It has to be
Odyssey
longer.
Odyssey was far, far too big. That's what put me off. Like I don't even know if I got halfway through that, but I was just done.
So I actually jumped back into Odyssey just because I've not finished all the DLC stuff, but I'm 95% through Odyssey. That's my ticker counter. So I've done an awful lot of that game. And as much as I'd say it's my favorite Assassin's Creed game, I think it is the best in terms of what it can offer, but it's too big. And because it gets to the point where it sometimes feels quantity over quality. I say that as a game that has a very high quality bar, but there's just some stuff that you're like, I don't know why I'm doing this.
One thing that Valhalla would benefit from is that England is a landform, Norway is a landform. Hopefully there's not lots of little islands, because that's what got me with Odyssey. Is obviously Greece full of little islands, and it was just annoying to me having to hop between them all. I know you can fast travel, but I just like one landmass seems first, a lot more manageable than
I mean, Odyssey
archipelago.
Odyssey suffered from the same thing that I had with Black Flag, which is I know that the reason why Black Flag is set on islands is because it's about sailing, it's about being the captain of your own pirate ship, but it did feel like I did an awful lot of hopping on the boat, moving 2 minutes down the map, hopping back off the boat, grabbing a bit of buried treasure, jumping back on. And when I can remember originally seeing the Odyssey map and going, oh, is this what we're going for again? I much preferred it when you got to spend a good chunk of like 3 hours on land rather than, because I think Odyssey's boat mechanics aren't as good as Black Flag, and I think that's partially just because cannons are just way more exciting than flaming arrows. So I'm hoping that, because obviously the long ships of the Viking era, I guess, I know that they were used for combat, but I think they're more a raiding craft to bring you to land. So I'm hoping that we do see a little bit of naval combat, but I want it to be more about those castle sieges.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm hoping that the naval stuff is just little sections in between, but the core getting around is done on land, really. And then a fast travel system, please, as well.
You could say that Odyssey suffered from a fair bit of naval gazing. So there you go.
Could we say that?
Yeah. Bit self-indulgent, okay. But still brilliant.
Yeah, we'll probably get... I'm hoping that if there is an equivalent of the Ubisoft E3, I want that. If you can remember when Odyssey was first announced at E3 that year, you got... I think they did like a 10-minute gameplay where they showed you bits of what it would look like as Alexios, bits of what it would look like as Cassandra, and went in and did like a real big highlights gameplay reel. Like, that's what I wanted from this. We obviously didn't get it. Hopefully we'll get that, I don't know, June, July, something like that.
Some point. Hopefully we will see more of the Vikings. That's a bit of history for you. Do you know what's even further back in history than that? Just cast your mind back. Further than Greece, further than Egypt.
Amoebas. The primordial soup.
Come back a little bit. Let's talk dinosaurs. They're back. Second Extinction is a game that looks like Left 4 Dead with velociraptors.
So, is it the dinosaur second extinction, or is it
I think that's probably the big question mark over everything. It depends how good you are at the game, Dale.
Oh, we'll see, won't we? Shooting dinosaurs, though, I feel like I'm going to be pretty good, mate.
From what we saw of that game, I think it looked very, very nice. And
I'm surprised at how pretty, because that comes from the same... So, it's an Avalanche game, but it's Systemic Reaction, which is their smaller
studio, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think they're a little bit smaller, a little bit more scrappy, and they obviously did Generation Zero, which looks garbage and plays garbage. So I'm surprised at how good. Like, I thought this genuinely looked quite pretty. Like, those landscapes were really nice.
I'm intrigued. Like, that style of like horde mode gameplay has never really grabbed me necessarily, but I'm up for dinosaurs, and it just seemed a bit stupid. Like, it was just a minute long montage of people shooting dinosaurs in the face. I mean, I don't know if there's much more to that game. Yeah, I don't know. Is that all you're doing?
Cause... I mean, that's all I want. Shooting dinosaurs. I mean, the funniest thing about that is when we were watching it live on Slack, I think Jesse just went, "This is dope." This is absolutely a Jesse game.
You can tell in people's Insta reactions, because in our Slack channel, we were like responding to every trailer, and I realized how many different viewpoints I have to a lot of people. I was watching that going, "This looks a bit naff. It looks beautiful, but the actual game looks to me like it's not my cup of tea."
I don't come to it with a huge amount of hope because I think Generation Zero is bad, but I really
don't
like...
Don't hold back, Matt. Say what you think.
I really like Left 4 Dead. Like, I genuinely have great memories of playing Left 4 Dead, which obviously at its heart is literally just shoot hundreds of zombies. So I think people have been chasing that dragon for a long time, and nobody's ever made a Left 4 Dead that's actually any good, aside from the original, you know, the Valve team. So... if they can capture even 60% of that feeling, then I'd play it a little bit.
Well, it did surprise me that they were like wide open environments like that, which you don't normally get for a game like that. I normally expect like small corridors and rooms.
Have you seen dinosaurs? They're massive.
Yeah, but have you seen Jurassic Park? I thought it was, you know, it could have been like the kitchen scene with the velociraptors, but 20 of them in there and you have a gun. That's more of it.
that sounds mental. I'm in. Let's do it.
Maybe it tightens up. But yeah, I'm obviously intrigued. We know very little about all these games. Well, some of them we know more about than others. But that one, brand new, hot off the press. One we know more about, though, is Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2. That's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just a bit. Yeah.
I've never played any of the games in this series, but I've been consistently hearing great things about this game whenever people have previewed it, and that trailer was disgusting. Like, the start of it was genuinely, I was just thinking, this is horrific. Have they put like an 18 warning on this? Because it's just like people strung up with like Joker smiles. Like, it was horrible.
Their eyes, like the amount of blood that's coming out of that guy's eyes with the fish hooks in the side of his face. Mad.
It reminds me of, like, obviously a bit of Bioshock and obviously a bit of We Happy Few, which is probably not a good omen. But, I'm intrigued. Tell us about this series, Matt.
So, if you go back to the days of Half-Life 2, Cardi, that's when the original one came out. They're based on a tabletop RPG. It's like a Dungeons & Dragons style thing, but it's set in... I don't know if it's actually genuinely the modern day. The World of Darkness is a modern fantasy, but I think it pulls a lot more strings from like the 70s and 80s. It's that, like Gotham does, it's that horrible, crime-ridden, slightly grungy city aesthetic. And yeah, it's the original Bloodline game was... It was on the Source engine. I think it was the second ever game, or maybe it came out just before Half-Life. So it was the first time people had seen Source engine. But it was janky as fuck. But it had got so much heart and... Well, I say heart. Hearts to drink from, obviously. But it's packed with personality, like really weird characters. They're, you know, when you watch films and it's vampires that have gone truly bonkers... Yeah. It's that side of that style of horror.
What, you mean like What We Do in the Shadows?
I mean, not quite as comedy focused, but big personalities and people that have obviously like gradually losing their minds over going through vampirism and stuff like that. So I've never actually played a huge amount of the original game. It sort of passed me by when it originally came out, and then I got into it later. It's obviously it's an immersive sim, so it's coming from the Bioshock, the Prey, the Dishonor sort of lineage of games. And I think what I saw in that trailer really sold not the mechanics of it, but the world. It looks vibrant. It looks weirdly very sexy. Odd. Yeah, it's very strange.
Going back to that, I would play a What We Do in the Shadows RPG.
Like, yeah.
Disco Elysium, but What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, absolutely.
You play that?
I how many vampire games have there been in the past? From this series.
From this series. So this is only the second one. But,
oh, really?
Yeah.
I feel like it's been around.
So the World of Darkness has got other games in it. So that's the setting, like how Dungeons & Dragons is a setting. There was, I can't remember what it was called, but it was a really short-lived online multiplayer game where you played as vampires, and it was garbage, basically, and that didn't get very far. But the Masquerade Bloodlines as an immersive sim game, this is only the second one.
Oh, right.
There was a game just called Vampire with a Y that came out that was not linked at all, wasn't there?
I feel like that's what I'm getting mixed up with.
No, so Vampire is its own deal. That was that's one of Focus Home Interactive's games. I believe there was a like a smaller vampire game that I think came out last year, which is part of the World of Darkness stuff. But it's not actually part of the Bloodlines series of games.
Right.
Well, there we go. I am intrigued by that one, yet to play it. I'm actually going to go back and look at some of our older previews because I can't remember what the gameplay is like particularly. So, going to do a bit of that. Another new game, well, kind of new, as Matt was telling me earlier, Bright Memory Infinite, a FPS made by one man in China, Matt. Tell me more.
So it's originally, it came out on PC, and I think it was probably about 2 years ago, and I can remember it made like a real splash, because it's this really slick-looking first-person shooter with like a distinctly Chinese aesthetic. I don't know if you noticed in the trailer, but it's got the trees and the architecture is very distinctly Chinese. And it's got that look of, I wouldn't say it's full AAA look, but it's definitely got that shine to it. Yeah. But it was made by one dude. It's just and people could barely believe it when it came out. The feature set it's got for, it's just a really competent first-person shooter. And I think it took quite a lot of people by surprise, but also it was, I think when it originally came out, it might have been like £1 on Steam, and it's gone up since. I think it retails between like £5 and £7 at the moment. But that game stands alone as the prequel to what is this bigger version now that's been made for Series X, and I presume it will come out on PC as well. And that's basically all I know, but it looks kind of like a slick FPS.
It looked cool.
I thought it looked really good, like graphically, and also it was one of the few games we actually, whether it was gameplay or not, we were presented an idea of gameplay as well. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of them were just trailers and stuff, and I think that was an interesting way to kick off. And yeah, like, I thought it looked incredible, especially considering the size of the team. Like I know this new one, he's probably got more people working with him now, I guess.
I mean, they said that, because I thought when I saw it and that it was going to a bigger thing, that it would still, he's found a publisher and now they'll have given him more guys. But when they were doing, you know how this Xbox event, you had a trailer and then there was some person that would tell you a little bit about what you saw. They did mention that it's a one-man team, so I don't know, it might be now a one-man team with a publishing team that helps him budget and helps him with all of that planning side. But they didn't suggest that he got any more people with him, so I think maybe it's just still him.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Man, what a talented man. Jesus.
From a talented man to a talented studio, we've got a new Bloober game, The Medium. Yeah. And surprise, surprise, it looks horrible. They are known for Layers of Fear, the Blair Witch game,
Observer.
That's it. Yeah. So they make horror, if you haven't guessed, and this one definitely looks like a horror game. As a medium, I believe. They had a little interview post show, which I'm not gonna lie, I half watched. But yeah, I'm into it. I'm not really a big horror game player. I like horror films. I love watching horror films, but I prefer to watch people play horror games than actually play them myself.
coward.
Well, I just don't find it that fun. It's not the scariness of it. I just, it's not what I look for. When I play a game, I look to more just escape and chill out. I don't really like to feel really tense like that.
I love them. I love horror games, but I think the part of it for me is just the adrenaline, the fear, like a horror movie, but like I'm the one making these stupid decisions and going around these corners and not knowing what's going to be there. And I've got a real, like I played the Blair Witch game. I thought it was okay. I thought it had some real slow bits, but the last couple of hours especially I thought were fantastic. Mm. And it was the best thing I can say about it. It was great at invoking the sense of the movies and the films. The movies and just putting you in that world. And I felt like I was in that world for a long time. I just thought it was a lot of filler in between. So I'm really excited to see what else they've got, especially because this is not attached to a property, I guess. This is just, you know, a unique IP. So I'm interested to see what they can do.
People really like Layers of Fear. Both of them are supposed to be pretty good, aren't they? As far as I know, I'm not overly familiar with that series.
See, I never really played Layers of Fear, so I'm not au fait with it.
I know Joe thinks a lot of them. Like, he really likes both. I think he likes Observer and Layers of Fear, so... Looking forward to seeing what that's like. Is that the one that's got? Is it the Silent Hill?
Yeah, the
composer.
Yeah, it's from the original Silent Hill composer, which that's a good name to get. Yeah, but it's a good signing.
Mm-hmm. That's got like a two worlds kind of thing by the look of the trailer, right? Do you go into a different?
I'm sensing you go into the medium world, like
it's like a spiritual world, and then.
Wasn't there a little bit of that kind of in Blair Witch when you used the video camera? You saw almost an alternative world sort of thing.
When you use the video camera, you'd see previous events, but affecting, rewinding and changing those events would change the real world as well. It'd affect it. It was really cool.
Sounds like they might bring something like that into this.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Mm. Nice. For something that's not really my bag, something that looked very much my bag, Call of the Sea is a first-person puzzle adventure game on an island. It's not The Witness, but you know, it evokes that in my mind. And it just looked, we don't really know a lot about it. It looked very nice. It's got that sort of Witness fire watchy sort of just bold color style, which I really like. Mm-hmm. And
has it been said that it was a puzzle game?
Yeah, it's a first person puzzle adventure game. And yeah, I'm up for it. You play as a woman trying to find her lost husband in the 1930s who went on an expedition. So
I must say, when it started, part of me was just instantly like, is this Valley of the Gods? Because, you know, that 1930s thing, and it looks a bit Firewatchy. And I knew that it wouldn't be because, obviously, those people work for Valve now and technically got moved on to Half-Life. But part of me was, oh, is there some sort of spiritual sequel to a game that might never come out now? Well, and I guess that might be what it is, but
yeah, saying like that, I also got Edith Finch vibes from it, which is always a good thing, because that is an absolute masterpiece.
Yeah, for me, either it goes one or two ways. It can go like Edith Finch way, which I think is brilliant, and then it can go Firewatch way, which I didn't think was brilliant.
I'm on your side. Really. I like but don't love Firewatch, but
yeah. I'm always hesitant with these sort of games until, you know, like it's in people's hands and I've heard good words about
but
it.
But this one isn't, crucially, like those two games, isn't really a walk-in sim in quotation marks. It's an actual, they're labelling it as a puzzle game. So there will be puzzles. And it also, just, you know, puzzles, Desert Island, it reminded me a bit of Monkey Island. And that is never a bad thing either, because Monkey Island should always be in the world. Do you know what else is always in this world? Scorn.
Is it terrible? Is it always in this world?
Terrible thing, Scorn. But that game does not look terrible because it looks like HR Geiger. I thought I got the second initial wrong for a second. It looks like he's drawn everything for this game, despite think being deceased.
Yeah,
let's just check that. Yes, he died.
I remember the day he died.
Yeah, there we go.
So I was at university and I worked in a media loan shop.
He did not design this game, but
no.
It looks horrible again. There was a lot of horrible looking games in this stream.
It was, I'd say, like, just as an overall, this was a bizarre stream. It was full of, I say, games that looked really grim and horrible that aren't what I'd imagine you'd use. This is supposed to sell a presumably 500 quid console to the masses.
This is also, quotation marks, the first look at next-gen gameplay and stuff as well. And it was just, not that it wasn't, like, nice-looking, but it was, you know, a bunch of smaller games, you know, that maybe are not the, you know, the power pushers.
Isn't
like
that
the
half
first
an hour stream? I'm pretty sure if you're a very cynical person, you can make a one-minute supercut of the actual gameplay we saw.
Yeah.
In all those put together.
But, and the other thing is, like you say, Dale, this was supposed to showcase, like, what next-gen is all about. Scorn is a game that we first saw in 2017 that was being designed for PC. It's like, it's not... I hope that in the background, as they've been developing that game, they have got a few ideas that push. But certainly when they did an alpha, which I think Jesse's played.
Well, then I was going to say, back to the Slack chat, the first thing that comes up just like, oh, I've played this alpha before. And I was like, what? I had no idea.
The one thing you don't get from that trailer is that it's a first-person shooter, which I didn't think until I looked it up.
It looks bizarre as well, like how you build weapons, right?
And they're all made out of bone and gristle and stuff like that.
I love it's pronounced Giga, right? Not Geiger.
Is it Geiger?
I believe it's pronounced Giga anyway. So I love his aesthetics previously. I've watched a lot of alien documentaries.
He made the Geiger counter.
But this, it also looks like he kind of threw up all over it as well. Like, there's no contrast.
Mm-hmm.
But at least on Alien, I felt like there was a contrast between that world and then the mechanical Earth sort of space marine world. And this one is just, it's all that. And I don't know if that's maybe a bit intense and a bit too much. I'm not sure how I feel about it yet.
Also, I know that Jesse said that he liked the alpha, but I can remember there being a fair amount of talk when that alpha was available that it felt a bit meandering and a bit old-fashioned. I think quite a lot of it is solving puzzles to open coloured locks and stuff like that. Hopefully, obviously that's a long time ago now. 3 years is quite a long time in game dev, so maybe things are very different. Maybe they have found a new direction. But last I heard of it, it was they're like a labyrinthine world and it's going around, obviously... I think quite difficult one-shot combat. I think it's quite easy to get insta-killed in it.
Right.
But certainly what I know of what it was supposed to be, it didn't really chime with me beyond it looking aesthetically interesting.
Mm-hmm. You just come back to a previous point. You guys are right about how much, like, all the videos that they're showing, like, it was... 90% dark stuff, right?
It was consistently grim, apart from the odd thing,
Madden and Dirt.
Madden and Dirt and Call of the Sea, which looks
and
quite
you got
nice.
You got Yakuza, which looks like I think Yakuza like a Dragon looks cool and fun, but even that is I don't normally associate Japanese games as something that Microsoft uses to sell a system, and that's very much a. They're for your more, I guess they're cult games, aren't they? They're for people that are a bit more embedded and historically maybe more on the PlayStation side, which might be what they're trying to coax out of you. Because I think Like a Dragon hasn't been confirmed at all for PlayStation 5. If you want that on next gen, you've got
to
get it on Series X.
For that. Yeah, it said, it said Xbox One, Xbox Series X, PC, PS4, but no PS5, which was slightly bizarre.
So it's just, as an overall thing, I don't know what this stream was going for. Like, who is it targeted at? Because none of these games are, I'm sort of probably already sold on the concept of the Xbox in general, because I quite like Microsoft's, I think Game Pass is an incredible thing. I resubbed to Game Pass yesterday so I could play Gears Tactics. It was a pound for a month of unlimited games, which is bonkers, and that is amazing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I need to be on board, because I know there's going to be a Halo at launch and stuff like that, but there are games here that I really want to play. Vampire is probably my highlight out of the stuff here, as well as Assassins, but they're games that I can get on my PC, they're games that I'm going to be able to get on PS5. I don't really know what I was going for here.
You're right, it feels a bit a mixed message. Like, if we're going for, you know, like the PC crowd and people are more like into the hardcore sort of games, and there's ones there, but then there's also Madden, and then there's also Dirt.
That's what I was going to say, like Madden,
who are we aiming at?
Madden was a bizarre one, because I didn't expect EA to be part of that stream, and they had Patrick Mahomes sitting there saying, "Oh, we all love Madden." And it's like, yeah, true, mate. If well, we don't all love it. If you like it, you do. And then,
oh my God.
Like, it was just like a 1 minute trailer, 50 seconds of which was clips of all the old games. And then, like, 8 seconds of Patrick Mahomes in, I assume, Madden 21, running around and jumping for a pylon. And that was it. So it wasn't really a look at the next gen of that, really.
The only thing I can think of a benefit of putting Madden in that is maybe all the new sites that write about it, right? Like Madden 21 coming to Xbox Series X, exactly. And then people searching for new Madden fix.
Especially as EA just announced their June event, which they'll do a deep dive on that, and you'd assume FIFA and whatever else they've got coming along. They don't have a PGA Tour anymore, though, which I saw 2K just out of the blue announced they've got the PGA Tour game now, which was slightly odd.
Didn't expect them to be picking up that
license. I used to play golf games with an alarming regularity.
Really?
Yeah, they're so good for just chilling out. Like, if you've got a podcast on, just play a round of golf.
I used to like Everybody's Golf. I used to play that a little bit. But I can't say I've ever played like an accurate sim version of a golf game. I used to play like the old
Tiger Woods golf game. But yeah, Madden is Madden, isn't it? If you don't like American football, you're not going to suddenly start playing Madden, are you?
Imagine if you did, didn't know what was going on.
I'll play with you.
No, I'm all right, thanks.
Sorry. Last one we're going to talk about, we're not going to talk about more, is The Ascent. That is our IGN first for this month, which means we'll be going deep on it all of May. This one did look cool to me because it is cyberpunk Diablo is the easy way of saying what this game is.
Yeah, it's so it reminds me a lot of Judge Dredd, the look of it. And I, from the stuff that I know of it, I think it's actually got quite a bit of good RPG-ness to it. There's certainly characters that you can talk to, which obviously Diablo has NPCs, but it's much more about the just pure fighting. I think there's a bit more story elements to The Ascent. Thought the world looked cool. I must say they did that thing that the trailer starts and it makes it look like it's going to be a third-person shooter.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, it's isometric. And obviously I like isometric games. That doesn't bother me. But it did feel a bit bait and switchy.
Especially for someone like me who's not necessarily into things like Diablo and isometric games in general. And then I see this trailer present all this cyberpunk imagery presented and think, this looks cool, what's this? And then,
do you think they were trying to grab people in the first few seconds and thinking, oh, it's a cyberpunk trailer?
I mean, if it's just a trailer of isometric gameplay, it's pretty dry, right?
It's like, difficult.
You've got to jazz it up.
Yeah, I must say, it's really difficult. As much as I like these games, and I've written about stuff like Divinity and Diablo quite a lot in my career, and when you try to illustrate that, God, those games are impossible to make look good on the page. It's something that very much is about the mechanics and the thinking of it. And I do like it. I think it looks a bit more twin stick shootery than Diablo, I guess, because it's a cyberpunk game and it's not about hitting things with swords. It's about shooting stuff. It looks like there's destructible environments. It's one of the ones I was most impressed of out of those. But yeah, it did that classic thing where they obviously knew they needed to hook people. You can't just go in and say, we've got a top-down shooter RPG here. You have to make it look like it's a more classic RPG before you then do that, lift the camera.
I'm into it. But we likely will not be playing a lot of those games till very late this year. So,
and perhaps next year.
You gotta wait. Yeah, exactly, yeah. At least, I think they... they did announce, quick aside, LEGO Star Wars come in October. Which is a little later than I thought, but I'm still glad it now has a release date, because when I saw that at E3, I just wanted to play it that day.
Have they announced that it's on next-gen platforms?
They haven't, but it is on the Switch, which I'm surprised by.
Hopefully it is, because I remember, I think it was LEGO Marvel Heroes
was the
launch title for PS4 and Xbox One. I remember going to buy my PS4, actually going up to the counter, and I was just buying Black Flag with it. And the guy was like, do you want this as well? And I'm like, no, I'm all right, mate. I've just spent a lot of money. And then he was like, it's 12 quid if you buy it with a console. I was like, I'll take it. and I really enjoyed it.
That is a great game as well. That is a fantastic platinum if you're looking for a platinum.
It was,
There you go. I think that was my first PS4 platinum. Actually, no, second son was. I lie. but not playing those at the moment. What have we been playing at the moment or watching? It's the lockdown catch-up section. Little jingle. Dale, what have you been doing?
Yeah, so I've played a couple of games recently, and I came to the realization yesterday, I think it was, that I'm playing games that are about isolation while I'm in isolation.
Playing Alien Isolation?
No, I haven't played that. I have played it previously. I haven't played it recently. And I just think I'm weird. Maybe I'm just very comfortable in my own solitude. I'm not sure. But I saw this game just on PSN. I knew nothing about it, but I saw it was called Deliver Us the Moon. And it caught my eye. Yeah, and I was like, I like that title, and I had money sitting in my account, so I picked it up. And I thought it was good. It's a relatively short game. I'd say it's like 4 to 6 hours, and it's you're one man in a spacesuit who's got to get to the moon because all the power's gone down and they've lost communications. And the whole journey, it's about from Earth taking off, getting to the space station, then getting to the moon, and doing lots of puzzles on the way. And you never meet any other characters. There's, apart from one section towards the end, there's never any enemies that you have to deal with. It's just exploring. It's Walking Simulator-esque, but it has a lot, like we were talking about earlier, it has a lot of puzzle mechanics to it as well. And I just found it a very relaxing and enjoyable experience. I don't know.
You say it's isolation, but you're still getting pretty much as far away as you could get from Earth at the same time.
But I'm in isolation.
Yeah.
Like, I'm on my own the entire time.
Yeah, I don't know. Were the puzzles, were they good puzzles or were they challenging?
I'd say the majority are relatively simple. And a lot of them are gathering resources and putting them together and building things or grabbing a power source to power up a door so you can get through it, and then you like almost a companion that you can control, and you can fly around and go and activate switches and stuff. Yeah, in a little way, yeah. In fact, it's very much like Observation, except for you're actually a human being in this one and not the AI.
Yeah.
So it's got a lot of that sort of vibe. There's lots of, situations when you're in airlocks and you're losing oxygen and you've got a Gavrex, and it does that excellent sound design thing of, you know, like completely creating a vacuum in sound and stuff like that. And it's just, it was fun. I wouldn't say, you know, it's rough around the edges, but it's definitely worth checking out if you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And something I've been playing recently, in fact, about 20 minutes before we started this podcast, I was playing as well.
You were 5 minutes late to this.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had things to do, all right?
I've been to play this game.
I'll explain in a second. We have it's a game called Stranded Deep, which I believe has been out on PC for a long time, actually. It was in, like Jesse said, he'd played it in beta and alpha.
He's played everything in beta.
Of course he has. Like, he's a little nerd, isn't he? but it caught my eye because it came on PSN and I saw a trailer for it. And basically, I don't know if you know, guys, but I like Lost.
I think
Lost is an amazing TV show. And I saw this game where you are stranded on a desert island and you've got to craft resources, and it's a survival game, basically. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I like Castaway. I like Lost. This speaks to me. And I started playing it. And at first I was like unsure because it is janky, it is ropey. And like some of the UI decisions are mental in this game. But it has proper got its hooks into me. Like, I'm 16 days into my island now. I've pretty much drained the island I'm on of resources at this point. I've built this huge house. I've built all the things I need.
So
I've got.
Is the aim to live and survive on this island or to escape back to the real world?
So the aim right now is to survive. But there is also story elements as well, which I haven't really come across yet. But you've got to get you build up like your crafting ability and your cooking abilities. And the more you build them up, the more options you have for things that you can build. And I found parts for like a gyrocopter and stuff like that. I just can't build it yet.
Okay.
So it's clearly thing. And there's, so you're on a isolated island, but there is, you can see in the distance other little islands.
Okay.
And, I've built myself a little basic raft at the moment. Like, it's very basic. It just gets me by. But I've already traveled to a couple of other islands, but that's more like a sort of a resource run. You go to these other islands to grab resources from this island, you load up your boat, and then you come back to your original island to build new things and gather new resources.
I'm not going to lie, mate, this sounds like Animal Crossing.
It might well be. But do you have like extreme survival things? Do you get
stung, you get stung by wasps.
Yeah. So I had a thing where for two days I was poisoned. And I was constantly draining. My water was just like
pissing
hydration
everywhere.
Level was just evaporating. And then eventually I had to go to another island so I could find this plant ingredient so I could build myself an antidote so I could finally become healthy again. I also got diarrhea at one point as well. So that was delightful.
So is it mirroring real life for you at all?
No, not necessarily. but it's something, again, it's like there's barely any music in the game, and when there is music in the game, it sounds like Castaway's music as well, like almost identical.
Have you got a little volleyball?
No, but there is lots of coconuts, mate, and they look like they've got little faces on, even though they don't. But it's extremely peaceful. Like, it looks beautiful as well. Like, when the sun is low on your island as well, it just looks incredible. And I'm just finding it a really, like, relaxing experience, just building my life on this little island on my own.
It's a nice type of backup plan. It's nice. Matt, have you been doing something really just nice, chill and relaxing?
No, because I've been playing Gears Tactics.
The exact opposite.
I only started playing this last night, but because I finished my XCOM Chimera Squad campaign, which was great. Other than, I tell you, I was telling you how buggy it was last week.
Yeah.
Fuck me, some of the bugs towards the end of the game. Just like research that I'd done, I put days of research into things and actually sort of invested money into it, just didn't add it to my inventory. Like, thanks, cheers. But I got through and I did the final battle first time, so I'm happy. Thank you. So that that campaign's over and done with. So I was like, okay, let's move on to Gears Tactics. Fuck me, that game is hard.
All right, okay.
And like, XCOM obviously is renowned for being quite a tricky tactics game.
We'll get on to that.
And I don't want to be too disparaging, but I thought with Gears coming from the lineage of a shooter, that this one might have been like the easier tactics game. It's not. I'm surprised. Like, the first mission is fine, but second mission, I was surprised at how difficult that was. And because what it's trying to do is, and I think this is really smart, is it's not, while it is fundamentally an XCOM style game, it's moving from cover to cover, it's shooting over, it's replicating what Gears of War combat feels like. So aiming is far more, it doesn't feel so much of the roll of the dice whether you hit or not. Yeah. Thinking about how far things away and how the recoil of the gun will affect it. So trying to shoot enemies that are much farther away, you can see the gun rattling and obviously the bullets aren't hitting. But the locust obviously moved very, very quickly in Gears of War, and you just constantly, that's where horde modes, the idea of that, was really popularized in Gears of War. And it feels like you're going up against hordes, and it means that grenades are massively important. It means that overlapping all your lanes of fire on your crew is important, and going up and hitting them with chainsaws and carving them in two is important.
Always important, that.
Yeah, so it's, and the way that, you know how an XCOM game is, it's all grid-based, and when you start a map, like, you look at the map, like, okay, here's basically a big square with little bits of cover in it. Gears Tactics doesn't do that. Like, the Gears Tactics map looks like a third-person shooter map, and all the way that the cover is arranged is exactly like Gears of War is. It's basically if they just pulled the camera up, and it's got the graphics of Gears of War, I'm finding it a little bit weird to get my head around about how they've made it, but the way that they've made it feel, and it feels a lot more, even more down to the wire, and XCOM could feel down to the wire, but because it's replicating this weird shooter vibe whilst being a tactics game, I'm only four missions into it now, but I've really felt like it's sort of set fire to my feet, and I'm having to keep like figuring out from moment to moment. But yeah, I'm impressed so far. I don't think it doesn't have that bit where in XCOM after the missions you go back to base and you've got a strategy layer.
Yeah,
and I feel that means that it's weird because you just get kicked back to a menu after a mission, and it's just like, well, just choose what mission you want to do next. And I like that XCOM feels a bit more all encompassing, and there's more of a narrative that even runs through the menu systems of XCOM, which Gears doesn't have. But I think they've done a surprisingly grand job of turning that into what it is. Yeah, I'm really excited to play a bit more.
Good.
And then beyond that, I've actually been... This came out ages ago. Did any of you guys watch Mythic Quest?
I didn't, because it looked like it would annoy me a lot.
So
yeah, I saw the trailer for it, and I wasn't sure that I'd be into it.
Basically, looks like Silicon Valley, but they're making an RPG. Is that right?
That is exactly what it is. Yeah. So it's actually made by. So it's the Always Sunny in Philadelphia crew, isn't it?
Because isn't it only Rob? I can never pronounce his name. Rob McElhenney, is it?
So he's in it, but the writers are Charlie Day. Is it Charlie Day?
Okay. Yeah, Charlie Day and Glenn Howerton.
So Glenn's not on it, but Megan Gans, was she part of the Always Sunny?
Potentially.
You're asking the wrong man.
Mm-hmm. So, like, there are people from shows that people like involved in it, but it's Ubisoft as well. And the thing I found, basically, I've been watching some Silicon Valley, and I was like, you know what, I'll try it. I'll see what it's like. If I get two episodes in, no worries. I watched it all in 2 days. I was surprised at how good it is. Like, genuinely taken aback, because the one thing I found is, so I watched Channel 4 did a show last year, which I never spoke about on the podcast because I thought it was crap, but just about a bunch of people playing an MMO, and it was exactly the sort of bad gamer humor that I didn't like, because it was people sitting in their rooms, never cleaning up, getting further filthy.
The joke is they're a nerd.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and got cheesy crisps on their fingers again.
Exactly. Now, the thing that I really like about Mythic Quest is not a single ounce of that. There's not the stupid nerd that plays Street Fighter and there's always dropping in jokes about, you know, Chun-Li. Or whatever. I'm not having a shot at Dale at all.
I was.
In fact, there's basically, there are no real games mentioned in this at all, aside from in the background, there's quite a lot of Ubisoft stuff. But there's basically no nerd humor in it, which I really like. That it's just, it's a workplace comedy, but the job that they're doing is they're making an MMO.
Right. So it's like the Office is about a company that makes paper, but it's not jokes about paper.
Exactly.
Well, sometimes it is, but mostly it's not. You know, it's about the,
Yeah. And obviously the situations I find are quite funny because they are game situations. So very early on, one of the episodes is based around Kotaku having written an article about the fact that that Mythic Quest is full of Nazis.
So they actually name check Kotaku?
Yeah, and Polygon, like one of the episodes involves.
Yeah.
No, I was surprised. No mention of IGN.
Unbelievable.
But I think in the way that the writing is based, the things that they're doing make sense for the websites that they use. So one of them is leaking a gameplay feature to Polygon. And Polygon always seem to be able to get scoops before other people, which might explain that they've been leaked. The whole when they bring up they're in their meeting room and they've got the Nazis story on Kotaku, the way that they built the Kotaku page to look and the headline is just Mythic Quest has a white supremacist problem. That is a Kotaku headline, like straight down.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's written by people that understand. There are occasions when it goes into, so for example, the actual MMO itself doesn't, it feels like it's been levered to make comedic situations. So for example, like one of the guys in the series is a guy called Brad, who's played by Danny Pudi from Community. And he's the head of microtransactions. But all of his microtransactions are based around like selling weapons, and obviously games don't sell weapons, they sell cosmetics.
Yeah.
So that feels a little bit like they've been engineered to make it funny so that they can do jokes around that. And there's one episode which is almost a little bit esportsy that felt slightly cringe because it's basically Rob McElhenney's character trying to fight another character in the game and they make it up as an arena, and that wouldn't necessarily happen. But in general, the fact that it is just more of a workplace comedy full of basically fairly shitty people, and it highlights a lot about the fact that like there are too many men working at the studio, and the lead engineer Poppy is a girl, and obviously she's, you know, has all the problem that women in games suffer and all of that. There's a few jokes at PewDiePie in it, which are kind of funny, but also the way that they present streaming isn't quite bang on, but it's funny enough to carry it. So overall, what I ended up with is like this really surprisingly, because I guess Ubisoft is behind it, it felt authentic, certainly to when I visited Ubisoft Studios, felt a lot of that. And then also it's got a really interesting, in the middle of it, it's just got a standalone episode that does sort of find its way to link later on. And it's just a really emotional, and it's Jake Johnson, right, the guy that was in New Girl and who voices older Spider-Man in Spider-Verse. He plays a guy who's a producer, and he meets a girl in a shop, and they basically make a studio together. And the entire episode is about the rise and fall of their studio as they build like this. It's a survival horror that they're building around that's very like old school survival horror. And when they get a publisher, it's all about how the publisher dilutes that dream, because they're like, it's got to have guns in it. Your next one's got to, the sequel's got to be way more impactful and action-y. Yeah. And watching that studio die because of publisher interference. And it's just oddly emotional as you watch their dream kind of collapse under pressures.
Sounds
and that
more interesting.
Surprised me. Yeah, way more interesting than I expected. Thought it was.
What is it on?
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
ask.
So you all have to, as I have done, take out a month subscription to Apple TV.
Will I have to do that? Because the Beastie Boys documentary is on there as well. And let's say I have got that without subscribing to Apple.
What?
And I will be watching
that. Call the police.
Probably today. What I have been doing, though, is I've been having one of those weeks where I keep playing a lot of games and nothing really sticks. So I'm trying to commit to some things. So what I did play was I played all of Telling Lies, which I said I would do last week. So I didn't let anyone down. That is the like FMV-led game from Sam Barlow, who did Her Story. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. I was in a similar position with Her Story where I kind of... This is not meant to sound big-headed, but within like an hour, I kind of worked out what was going on here with the story, and I was like, okay, I'm going to play for another 3 hours and pretty much wait for another twist that never happened. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And to be fair, I think a lot of the acting in this is very good, which sometimes lets down these games.
Oh, yeah.
But this was very good, and it was well-written. It was all very well-made. Like, I appreciate all... how you do it, how you have to search for the keywords to find what you want in each video clip to piece together this mystery, of which you're not told anything about when you start. So you're not even told really what you're trying to solve or what the story is that's being told. And I worked it out in the end. And yeah, it was just like, I finished and I was like, that was fine. Like, I don't know. If it's cheap, I recommend play it. It just came out on consoles last week. I played it on my laptop though, because the game does take place on a laptop, so it makes most sense to play it on a laptop.
Authentic experience.
It was enjoyable. I also watched all of Devs.
Is that good?
Episodes of Devs. I really liked it. Yeah, it is so bleak. It is miserable. Like, there is not a laugh in that show, but I enjoyed it. It's that kind of clinical looking sci-fi that's like near future, could be current day in an alternative timeline, set in like San Francisco, the Valley, that sort of area. And it's about like a company that are doing something mysterious. I don't really want to tell people what it is because that just ruins it. But it's got Nick Offerman. I think Joe briefly talked about it a few weeks ago. Nick Offerman from Parks and Rec is the like Bezos like head of this company. More of a Steve Jobs, actually. But, it's quite slow, but I like slow. And, it's just bleak. I really, really was liking it until I talked to Joe about it. We're in a similar boat. Like, the second half of the last episode lets it down slightly. I don't think it ends badly, but they do some things that are just, like, not needed. And it didn't... I really liked... It's written by and directed by Alex Garland, who did Annihilation. I really like how Annihilation ends. I think he nailed that ending. Mm-hmm. Whereas this one, he was close to nailing, I think, but didn't do it. And I was in a similar boat to Telling Lies, actually. I kind of worked out halfway through where this was going and was waiting for that extra story twist or beat that didn't quite happen either. But very good drama. It's all on iPlayer at the moment, all 8 episodes, so you don't have to subscribe to anything.
Are they like hour-long episodes?
I think the first one's an hour, the rest are about 40 minutes.
Okay.
It's manageable. I did watch them, yeah, all in the space of 2 days, which was a bit heavy going. So maybe they feel like a one or two a night job, really. But yeah, that was really good. I've also been playing XCOM 2. Let's go back to XCOM. I've been seeing, because obviously Chimera Squad came out, Gears Tactics came out. I've been seeing a lot of tactics out there. And I was thinking, I haven't played a tactics game in a while. And I
play Football Manager all the time.
Yeah, it's not the same, is it? So I re-downloaded XCOM 2 onto my laptop, and I've been playing that last couple of nights. And I forgot how, like, I know they're not easy games, but I just forgot how bad I am at them. Like, I've only done like 4 or 5 missions, and I've already had like 6 people die.
Oh, you're not a save scummer?
No. I play it properly.
Properly, eh? Yeah.
Well, you know, it's the game. Permadeath's there for a reason. So already, Harry Kane's already dead, and I'm gutted about it. I'm just going through the Spurs squad, so I've and I coloured each of their armour for their national kit colours. Do you know what's weird about XCOM 2? So there's about 20 different nationalities you can pick for your soldiers, and they have like a lot of common ones, like the one, like the big countries you'd expect, and there's the odd random one like Venezuela, which I'm not really sure why that is. But they have bizarre option, which is there's no England, there is United Kingdom, but then another option is Scotland, which is separate from United Kingdom. Is this a future timeline where Scotland have separated?
I mean,
I think that's just a mistake.
Because I'm not going to lie, I was looking at United Kingdom for Harry Kane, Dele Alli and Harry Winks, and I also put Ben Davis in there, and I thought if they have Scotland, they have Wales. Didn't have Wales, so he had to be United Kingdom as well. So that's the issues I'm having with XCOM 2. But no, it is just such a well-designed game and very difficult. Even I'm playing it on normal, and it's not easy, it's hard. But I'm getting through it, and I feel like I'm slowly relearning, because I think I was going a bit too blasé, because you have to remember you do have to retreat and run back sometimes, whereas I was just going forward and forward and forward and getting killed, and they're not easy games, are they, Matthew?
Oh, it's about learning those flanking manoeuvres.
The problem is I'm getting flanked. I'm the one getting flanked.
The other thing is by XCOM 2, I think, is much more about your positioning of your soldiers and just using the guns, because when you get to Chimera squads and you've got a bunch of aliens, you've got way more special abilities to use. So I think Chimera Squad, that's where the main difference they found by the end of it was using abilities and much more flushing out enemies with special grenades and stuff like that. Whereas I think with XCOM, you've got all of your tech is largely around building your guns up and building your armor up and then being able to use those units efficiently.
I was wondering, like, this might be a stupid question because there might be a really obvious one that comes to mind that I feel kind of about. Is there any, like, online multiplayer XCOM-like games where you can just say I wanted to play against you at XCOM?
At XCOM?
Or something, you know, a game of that style. Like, I don't know if that exists as an online game, like a turn-based tactics.
It feels like it's
made for that. Like,
so apparently XCOM 2 did have multiplayer. I think it's got, like, a PvP.
Okay.
Multiplayer.
That should be an eSport. Why is that not an eSport?
I'd imagine because it doesn't move super fast, and eSports is about speed, isn't it?
Yeah, but people watch like League of Legends, and I don't understand what's going on.
They do though, so all right.
Yeah, I know. I want to watch XCOM. That's what I want to watch. Where's the XCOM TV series? Anyway, and one last thing, which I haven't started playing yet, but I am going to start today. It's going to be a big milestone for me. I'm going to play through all the Halo games for the first time. I've got time on my hands. I'm going to bite the bullet. I've never got round to it. I also this week re-upped my Game Pass, so I've downloaded the Master Chief Collection. I'm going to be playing it in co-op with my friends Tamora and Lucy, who reside in California, which means I can't stop playing till about 8 p.m. each day.
Bloody hell, you're going to be knackered every morning.
I'm not. But well, I can only play for an hour in their lunch break during work days anyway. So, but the problem is, we were going to play it all co-op, but the first two Halo games are only two-player co-op, which I didn't know. I thought they were all four-player. So we're gonna do it in chronological order. So I'm going to start with Halo Reach and then play them in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 order. Ooh.
Is that wise, mechanic-wise?
It's story smart. I looked at a couple of articles and a lot of people did recommend playing it this way now, so I don't know. Right. I don't know. Matt, what do you think?
I mean, Reach has quite a lot of it. It has what's called, I think they're called armor abilities, which is, for lack of a better term, it's basically like you'll have a little ultimate ability, but they can be things like bubble shields and bits and bobs like that. Your weapon loadout between Reach and Halo 1 will feel very, very different. There are definitely archetypes that Halo uses for its weapon step, but I remember Halo 2 being a super step up in weaponry over Halo 1. And obviously, Reach has the benefit of Halo 2 and 3 to learn from. But you might find that some of the actual set pieces are more exciting in Reach, and then you go back to a game that Halo 1 is less based around set pieces in the way that we traditionally think of them now. But I think the narrative of Halo 1 is better than the narrative of Reach. And there's some real... I think Halo Reach goes to some dark places, but 1 has got a little sinister element to it that I don't think the Reach does. Mm. But I think you're going to have a good time. I love those games.
Well, we're going to play Reach together, and then the plan is to play 1 and 2 by ourselves, because it's only two-player. Or if someone wants the two-player co-op Halo 1 and 2 with me, feel free. That's not a general thing to everyone, by the way. Look, I'm not getting a message saying, do you want to play Halo with me?
I won't rob your bonding time with Lucy. That sounds like a lovely time for you. But if Lucy's not available, I'm happy to play with you.
No, I'm going to... So the plan is we're playing Reach 3, 4 and 5 together. 1 and 2... we're going to do on our own time. So
really?
We can play 1 and 2 together if you want, Matt.
Yeah, I don't mind.
There we go. This doesn't sound like you're overly infused.
He's twisting his arm.
If I've got the time, I might. It's fine. Gears Tactics does sound more appealing than me. But do you know what sounds appealing right now, Dale? A little quiz from you. Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search?
Oh. okay. All right. It's not from me. It's from somebody who wrote in called Jim White. Jim White says,
the Sky Sports News presenter.
Yes.
Or Jimmy Wellwind White, the snooker player. I played his snooker game on PC a lot when I was about 7.
Oh. Yeah. Anyway, this is what Jim's got to say. He says, hey all, my quiz is a video game themed rip-off of the game Obama Llama. Do you know this game?
I know of it. I think I've played it once or twice.
Not a clue.
So basically, you are given a one-line clue where the beginning and end parts need to be solved. To find the answer, which is always a rhyme, the linking bit in the middle stays the same. So here's an example to sort of illustrate that, because I probably didn't explain it very well. So the clue is English adventuress is in an attic, I should say. And the answer would be Lara Croft is in the loft.
Okay.
Is this making sense?
Right.
It makes sense.
Yes.
It did make sense when I read through it a couple of times yesterday. So I'm going to give you a clue. Like English Adventuress is in an attic. And from that, you'd gather, okay, English Adventuress, we're talking about Lara Croft. So Lara Croft is in a loft. You got it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So he gave us 20. I don't know if we'll go through all 20, but we'll see how we get on.
Okay.
So let me get a little piece of paper to score you boys. Okay. So they're all video game based, remember? So the first one is John the Spartan is a robber.
Sorry, I want to clarify something. The words rhyme with those words, or the final sentence?
Oh, that's the rhyme. Master
the
Chief.
Final sentence,
I've got it. It's Master Chief is a thief.
There you go.
There we go. Got it. That's right. Solve that for me. There we go.
Yeah, there we go. Answer that question. Okay, cool. Number two. Mushroom Kingdom Monarch lays on the seashore.
Princess Peach lays on a beach.
There we go. Caddy's got it. We've got the rhythm.
Is a princess a monarch?
Technically not, but maybe, maybe at least within the realms of Mario, she is.
Yes.
Okay, it's 1-1.
He says next yes, one. Queen, all the time.
Oh, God. Sticky Japanese ball rides a classic motorbike. I think this is a tough one. Sticky Japanese ball rides a classic motorbike. This is a tough
Katamari
one.
Rides a Harley?
There you go. Caddy's got it. Not as hard as I thought. Metal Gear Spy swims in a landlocked body of water.
Snake in a lake. Snake swims in a lake.
Yeah. Solid Snake swims in a lake. Yeah, right. To all. Preposterously proportioned witch is writing a piece of correspondence. Preposterously proportioned witch.
I've got it.
Is writing a piece of correspondence.
It's Bayonetta is writing a letter.
Matt, I think we found your, like, this is your game.
I like it.
It's just coming so naturally to you. Okay, number 6. The immune girl has lost her waterproof shoe.
Ellie has lost her welly.
Bloody hell, you guys are good at this game. It's 3-all.
Yeah.
Whenever, flex there, you know.
Whenever anybody says welly now, all I can think about is welly baby. Have you listened to the gossip welly? Mongers?
Yes, yeah.
No, I haven't. No, not yet.
Oh,
my God.
I
do need to listen to those because
I listened to an episode this week that was amazing. I can't go into it. I'll talk to you about it afterwards. It's so funny. Right, where are we at? Okay. Rapture's father berates his club handler. Rapture's father
got
berates his club berates his club handler.
Club handler?
Yes. Oh, tricky one, this one.
I mean, we all know it's Andrew Ryan.
Andrew Ryan.
We've got that.
Yeah.
It's not Andrew Ryan.
What?
Rapture's father. I think
that's
literal.
Big Daddy
berates his...
Caddy.
There you go.
So golf is a PGA Tour reference. The callbacks.
I think Rapture's father is misleading.
But it works both ways.
Yeah. Okay, number 8. And it's 4-all, by the way. So I say let's go to 10 and we'll see what happens. Hasty Hedgehog drinks his revitalizing elixir.
Sonic drinks a tonic.
Hey, Caddy, got it. Okay, number 9.
Ooh.
Daft Orange Marsupial is a right laugh.
Crash Bandicoot is a hoot.
Yeah, Caddy. 6-3, mate. You've stormed it.
Yeah.
We've got one. We'll do one more, though, which is number 10. Misnamed Ape wears revealing undies.
Donkey Kong Donkey wears a thong.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say Donkey Kong has a schlong.
Yeah, who said that? Oh my God. That's a different clue. That's a different clue.
It's not, though. It's not.
Where is it? Revealing undies. Oh, is it Miss Name 8 reveals his undies? Might work. Okay. Who actually got that, by the way? Because I wasn't looking at the screen.
It was bad. Okay. It was definitely not. Okay.
So 6-4 to Caddy was the final score.
They both work.
We've got another 10 here, by the way, which we could do another week.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you very much, Jim White, for sending that in.
Yeah. Nice, yeah. Should we do some feedback?
Yeah.
If you want to send in feedback, send it to ign_ukfeedback@ign.com.
We also need a name for that quiz, by the way. It can't just be called Video Game Obama Llama. So someone rhyme with a creative rhyme time.
It's rhyme time. There we go.
Okay.
Done.
cheers. That killed that then.
Kong Schlong. Call it that.
Kong Schlong. I like that. That's absolutely what we should call it. Donkey Kong Schlong.
Matt does not look approving. right. I have got a piece of feedback from Caleb LaRue who says, "Fellas, hope you're all well and staying healthy. Are we? are we all well?
I am well. Whether I'm staying healthy is debatable.
Good. Yeah. I just watched the Warcraft movie, and while it's far from perfect, I don't think it's anywhere near as bad as it gets treated. The CGI orcs look amazing, and there are some great things in that that a sequel could really build on. I know there'll probably never be a sequel, but I would love to see one that brought in more of the lore and stories of the games. If you could fund a sequel for any financially or critically failed movie, what movie would you pick? Thank you for that. CJ in Nebraska. There we go. I've still never seen Warcraft, actually, so I imagine it's absolutely fine. I have no connection to Warcraft, the actual game, though, so...
Yeah, I went to the media screening for Warcraft, actually, and I remember thinking, even though I had no affection for the game, actually quite enjoying it, thinking it was okay.
I didn't like it.
There we go.
I absolutely agree that I think the CGI orcs did look incredible. I think the entire film should have been CG, because I think the humans and all the stuff from Stormwind in that film look bizarre, because it's a bunch of humans in costumes that are based on costumes that are made out of like 6 polygons, so they just don't look right. Massive shoulder plates on actual humans does not look right at all. Like, it's something that is designed for CG, for video games, for, you know, not real people. It just didn't look right to me.
It's always that problem with video game movies, isn't it? It's striking the balance between being faithful to the original property, but also, you know, making it work for a realistic...
That's why the MCU is incredible, because all of those costumes are based on literally line drawings that have got barely any detail in them at all, because those characters have to be drawn 17 times in the space of a page. And yet the MCU turn those into incredibly detailed, like, cool costumes that you can instantly tell who they are, even though I think they've found the balance that films need to.
I think there was a couple of maybe missteps in the earlier films, but I think they've definitely now, they've got a real rhythm of it, of getting these costumes right.
Yeah, Cap's Avengers costume is fucking travesty.
I've spoken about this previously, but I've been watching them recently, and that is mad that he had that costume out of nowhere, and then they quickly realised that wasn't the way to go, and then they pulled him back to his other costume. And his gear in like Winter Soldier and stuff, and Civil War is great.
Mm-hmm. Has anyone got any ideas for critically or financially failed films that they'd like to see sequels?
I'm going to be honest. I quite like Waterworld, and I'd like to see. I like the world of Waterworld, of the idea of the world, not necessarily Kevin Costner's character, who's a dickhead in it, but I like the concept of that world. And
how
I'd like
do
to
you
see
do a sequel? Considering, let's not spoil the film, but how that film ends.
Let's not spoil Waterworld.
Easy, mate. You do a prequel and you just don't use any of those characters. You just do it on another side of the world.
Okay.
Another
I don't
side
know
of
what
the water.
The story is, though, because it's a very definitive story, that film.
You
is
write
to
a
tell.
News story. Yeah. I don't know. I just like that world, is what I'm trying to say.
I remember, I say I don't mind it. I remember watching it when I was about 10 and thinking this was cool. So who knows? Have you got any, Matt?
Yeah, Dread. Obviously that's not a critical failure at all. Everybody I know likes Dread, and it was really well received.
The Stallone film is amazing, with Rob Schneider in it as well. He's hilarious.
All right, Dale. Wind it on 20 years.
Granddad.
No, Dread is incredible.
Yeah, but obviously it made next to no money at all. And I can remember going to see it. I was the only person in the cinema when I went to see it, which was really great. I had a private screening of Dread for a tenner. But and I think outside of our circles, nobody knows it at all.
Do you remember how over the top all the 3D stuff was in that film? Did you go watching it in 3D?
Yeah.
That felt like a bit of a waste of money, to be honest.
But man, that it's one of the, like, in general, like, I don't think 3D works at all, and I think for the majority of that film it doesn't. But that breach scene when he breaches the door and they're all on drugs and all the blood is coming out the screen, like, it's mental, but as just a piece of spectacle,
it looks great on a Blu-ray. It doesn't need to be in 3D.
Some people would say that they judged Dread too early. They judged Dread by its cover and not by seeing it. I've got one that's similar, which is by no means critically disliked, but had a budget of $20 million and only made $9 million back. pop star, Never Stop, Never Stopping.
Is that all it made?
It did not make a lot of money. Cause
I feel like on DVD sales alone.
Lonely Island, I don't think, are that popular. Like, I love them, and a lot of people do love them, but they're not. They're essentially started as a YouTube channel, so, and Saturday Night Live, but, you know. Popstar just didn't make a lot of money, despite Andy Samberg having a touch of gold to almost everything he touches. But I say it's not. Yeah. IMDb, it's only a 6.7 out of 10 average vote, so people don't know gold when they see it, basically. Oh, yeah. But yeah, that film could easily, not necessarily a direct sequel, but just give me more Lonely Island films and visual poems.
Yeah. Just make, it doesn't have to be in that world at all, just make more about musicians who are crazy and live, you know, exactly. Like, who are caricatures of what real life musicians are, like a Kanye type character or something like that. Just do more of those sort of things.
So basically, the first one, I suppose, was Bieber was probably the closest.
Yes, I guess so, yeah.
Or...
But he was more kind of just covered a lot of those sort of pop stars of that era,
yeah.
You know.
But, yeah.
Just, you know, surround themselves with yes men and people who are there just to humour them.
Yeah, but Popstar 2, that'll do nicely. Thank you. Dale, some feedback.
Ah, yes.
Let us also, IGN underscore UK feedback, IGN.com, let us know of any films that you would like to see a sequel of that you never think will.
Okay, this is from Johnny Hunter. And he says, evening chaps, whilst bored the other night in my lonely room, I got to wondering which long dormant franchises you'd like to see make their return on the upcoming next gen console. Personally, on the Xbox Series X, I'd like to see Rare make a sequel to Jet Force Gemini and to bring back Banjo-Kazooie. On the PS5, I'd gladly take a new Jak and Daxter game, and as for the Switch, give me Eternal Darkness 2. Keep up the good work and looking forward to your answers. P.S. Satsumas are clearly the best small oranges, and I refuse to believe otherwise.
Yeah.
And PPS, it's PSS, he wrote. Food mashups, pot noodle sandwich, thank you.
I won't. Satsumas, they're fine. Come back to me when you've tried a clementine. Clementine? Some people say
clementine.
It differently. I say clementine.
I don't know. I think Satsumas.
I think you are wrong. dormant franchise. Are there really, like, Banjo-Kazooie and Jak and Daxter, like, do people still want more mascot platformers at the launch of a new generation of consoles?
I don't know. I think that's, like, you know, it's nostalgia for your childhood, right? You're like, for me, it was like, I was desperate for Crash Bandicoot to come back, and then it came back, and it's like, yeah, it's good fun. Do I need another one now? Probably not.
One of mine would be Bioshock, but we know a new one's in development anyway.
I have one that I would love to see and has been stopped and started several times, and that's Silent Hill. I would love a new proper Silent Hill game made by people who really, well, people they had lined up to make one. But who knows whether we'll ever get that again.
Yeah. I know, Matt, you're not a fan, but I do love Infamous. I'd play a new Infamous. But they
keep that.
They're on Spider-Man, not Spider-Man, on Ghost of Tsushima duty anyway. Yeah. So
they're on games that actually make them money now. So. I say that Infamous probably did all right, but it wasn't like Spider-Man.
Bring back Guitar Hero. No, that failed.
No. Not Spider-Man. Sorry.
Ghost of Tsushima.
So it's Sucker Punch do Ghost of Tsushima, right?
Yeah,
and it's Insomniac. Okay.
I did the same thing. Yeah. Can you call GTA dormant? You can't. I would play Bully 2, though. So maybe that's dormant. Let's have a Bully.
Yeah, I've still not played Bully 1.
You should.
I must say, like, on this subject, like, all the stuff I like is definitely coming back. Like, before this podcast started, we were trying to think of things. And Kazi, you were just exactly right. And like, you can't have Half-Life because Half-Life came out this year. Yeah. That's really... And Bioshock, has been... I'm actually watching my housemate play Bioshock Infinite at the moment. Still absolute banger.
Incredible game.
But that's not been dormant that long when you think about it. It's just had a long development to get into a new one. I'd say a new System Shock, but that was technically Prey, and Prey wasn't that long ago.
New Monkey Island.
Yeah, New Monkey Island would be lovely. Maybe a new Thief. Something like that, but in general, I'm not.
What about Splinter Cell?
Oh God! Oh, actually, that is one. Yeah, you found it.
There you go,
found it, Cardi. Thank you.
There we go. We'll have a bit of splinter cell. Thank you, please. Now do some feedback, Matt.
Yeah, so this one is from Joshua Piggott-Smith. And it's about stuff that I barely know anything about, so it's mostly
I thought it'd be funny for you to read it, mate.
Oh, thank you, Dale. So, hi, guys. Firstly, wanted to say thanks for keeping up the great content during these dire times, especially as it gives me a different voice to listen to apart from my dogs or my fiancé once a day.
The dog has a voice.
I mean, sounds like he's got a good deal on the... Would it be good to have a dog that could talk, or would it be absolutely awful?
So I quite enjoyed Red 13 in Final Fantasy. I did finish that last weekend, actually.
Yeah.
But what a great
game. I don't think that's how... Like, are you thinking a dog would only talk, like, communicate the actual things he wants, or would he have, a human brain?
Yeah, see, Red 13 is a wise old boy. Yeah. My imagining of a dog with a voice is just someone that's just like, bone, food,
Scooby-Doo, basically.
Yeah. Speaking of dire, and yes, I intentionally did set up that awful pun for Cardi because I know he loves them. I'm so glad you prefixed the start of your Football Manager Euros video by mentioning that you're Spurs fans, as many, many questions would have been raised by the fact that every single former and current Spurs player made the Euro squad, despite most of them being in worse form than another option.
I don't think it's unreasonable to say a lot of those players would be in the squad, but I do admit some that Dyer would probably not get in at the moment. Rose would probably be third or fourth choice left back at this point. But you're putting Kane, Ali and Winks in there.
Yeah. Come on. Well, anyway. Winks is up for debate.
No, he's not.
Yeah, he is.
I don't think you know what you're talking about, Dale.
Anyway, you did beat him to the punch because he was then like, dire, seriously.
Yeah, I read it.
Well, I'm supposed to be reading it.
Read it.
Aside from that, I absolutely loved the first episode. Great laughs, as well as giving me some useful tips for my mighty Sheffield United. Maybe do a bonus one by simulating the end of the season. I do have a Football Manager related question at the end of this. What is your most annoying feature you found with the game? I think mine has to be a bizarre glitch that 80% of goals I concede are straight from kickoff or in the first 5 minutes after half time. Infuriating.
That is bizarre. Maybe you need to set your teams out to be cautious at the start of a half. There you go. I don't know.
I've got when it comes to transfers. The amount of times that players will say things like, oh, they're interested in moving to me, and then I'll come to negotiate the wages, and their wages will be ridiculous that I can't afford.
That must be a mobile thing, because in the main one, you can properly scout and know how much they'll want before you offer and stuff, so...
No, but it's the purpose of that. I can't afford their wages, so I have to let the deal fall through. And then they act like they're disappointed that the deal fell through. And then also there's sometimes where the board are so strict on what wages I can give. Mm. Even though I could get like Haaland or someone incredible, they won't give me that extra 10K just to put that deal through. I find it infuriating. Your head, lads.
Yeah, there are stuff like that where a player's like, oh, I really want to leave or I really want to go out on loan. And then you offer to all the clubs... No one really wants him, and then someone does offer him, they turn it down and they still moan and they weren't allowed to leave. It's like, well, I gave you the option. So the grass isn't always greener, son.
It's like, yeah, you gave me the option, but I didn't want that option. I wanted another option. It's just like, sport brats.
Ugh, tell me about it, Dale. Right. What a lovely time we had there.
It was a long one as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to... get on my Halo later. That's what I'm going to do. Because, as Beyonce said...
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.